there's some limitations for the current probiotics. So we wanted to focus more on the commensal microbes that are host adapted, because we do have this evidence showing that for the microbes that did not like co-evolve with the host, might be just a passenger in the gut, it would be hard to colonize. But having a community or core microbes that can colonize the gut might be a better approach.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
AccuGut C.1 is a proven solution for your coccidiosis toolbox. Give those traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/AccuGut to learn more. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. Sid Lines, an eco-lab company, AV Prime program offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene on your farm or hatchery.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Doug Corver, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the poultry industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay informed with today's episode. If you find this interview interesting, please let us know by visiting our website at wisenetics.com. Today, we're happy to have with us two guests, Dr. Ting-Ting Zhu, who's an assistant professor in microbiome and microbial resistance at Purdue University in the Animal Science Department, and also Dr. Camilla Marcola, who is a postdoctoral research in the Department of Agricultural Food and Nutritional Science at the University of Alberta, focusing on the microbiome. So welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So it's good to have two guests at the same time. So I'd like to start by asking each of you a little bit about your background. So Ting-Ting, how did you end up in your current position at Purdue University?
Yeah, so I actually got my bachelor's degree in animal science back in China Agriculture University, where I also continue to do my master's there in animal nutrition and feed technology. I went to Canada to study gut microbiome at University of Alberta, where I met Camilla. And I continued to do my postdoctoral training there, working on the host-microbe interactions. So Camilla has been a great colleague and friend. So I'm so happy that we can join the interview together.
Yeah, that's great. So Ting-Ting, did you focus primarily on poultry at the University of Alberta or other species as well?
Yeah, so I think my experience working with poultry can be traced back to my undergraduate research project. So, but then I got really interested in the field, and when I studied the gut microbiome at Alberta, I have worked closely with Camilla to understand the gut microbial communities in different production systems and what are the antimicrobial resistance look like from different production systems, and how we can harness their potential to actually promote the health and growth performance in chickens.
How about you, Camilla? What's been your career path so far?
So for me, I got a DVM from Brazil, and during my whole DVM program, I have been working on a monogastric nutrition lab. So I had the opportunity to work with both poultry and swine, and also with a little bit with pet nutrition as well, dogs and cats. And then I did a master's also in Brazil, focused on swine nutrition. And then for my PhD, my goal was to continue on working on the swine field. But then I applied for a PhD at the University of Alberta, and then Dr. Ben Wheeling, my previous supervisor, had this project in the poultry gut microbiota, and that's what got me into poultry again. And then I had the pleasure to meet Ting-Ting at the Dr. Wheeling lab, and we have worked a lot together, and it's a pleasure to be working with her today again.
So postdoc position, obviously that's not a career, but what's on the horizon for you? What are you looking for?
So I'm currently working on mostly focused on metagenomics analysis and most of the microbiota analysis on the bioinformatics competition side of things. So I want to get this kind of training and then probably apply for a PI position, so academic position or an industry position in the nearby future. I'm just wrapping up my training and applying for positions.
Well, all the best in that.
Thank you.
A worldwide leader in animal nutrition, Adiseo's portfolio of products includes methionine, the full range of vitamins, enzymes, organic selenium, probiotics, mycotoxin management strategies, and palatability products. With such a diverse offering, Adiseo supports its customers with a broad range of expertise, tools, and services to help them maintain a competitive advantage. Adiseo, fueling predictable profits. To learn more, visit Adiseo at www.adiseo.com.
So you both worked for Ben Willing at the University of Alberta. So can you describe a little bit the projects that you were working on while you were there?
I think our lab back in Alberta does a lot of different types of research. So it can be ranged from like livestock species and poultry, human microbiome and fermented food. So I think it actually gives us opportunity to learn about all these different microbial communities, different systems, including different animal systems. So working with like well-controlled model systems to understand the host-microbe interactions was really helpful. In terms of poultry, we do a lot of basic understanding of the commensal microbes. So the word commensal means a share a table. So it's actually a Latin word. That means it's not about like just about pathogen. We wanted to know what are these microbes living in harmony in the gut? What do they do? What are their basic biology and functionality? On top of that, we wanted to translate that knowledge into practice, how we can help the animals to grow better and to have better health.
Yeah, so I think a big part of like what we have done in the Willing Lab is trying to understand those communities of microbes that are living within animals, and that included poultry and mice and swine as well, and also the fermented foods, and what is the role of each bacteria within the community. Because we like to say that we need to have a beneficial microbiota, but we still don't know who should be there in order for that microbiota to be beneficial. So having experimental models with defined communities of commensal bacteria that we can actually understand the role of individuals within that community, I think that's a major piece that we're missing currently, and that we're trying to define and understand and then use that as a tool for improving production or animal health.
So it sounds like that's related perhaps to probiotics, the concept of probiotics. Is that fair?
Yeah. So I think probiotics has been well recognized. You know, they're live microorganisms you can give to the animals or like for human consumption. It helps with the gut health, which is a pretty general term. I think there's some limitations for the current probiotics. So we wanted to focus more on the commensal microbes that are host adapted, because we do have this evidence showing that for the microbes that did not like co-evolve with the host, might be just a passenger in the gut, it would be hard to colonize. But having a community or core microbes that can colonize the gut might be a better approach. So I think that's something we are looking for. One thing I would like to add to it is that this concept is not new. So I think in the past like 60 to 65 years, researchers have found that there are some missing microbes in early life. If we colonize the chicken with this community, they can generate some disease resistance effect. So, but now we have better technologies to understand them. So I think that's something we're looking for.
Camilla, what are some of the limitations of commercial probiotics?
So I think what we mostly discuss is that most of the probiotics that we have available, especially in Canada, they are bacteria that are coming from the soil or from fermented food products. So as Tintin said, they didn't exactly co-evolve in the chicken gut when the chickens evolved as a species. So that brings some limitations because they don't have that adaptability to the chicken gastrointestinal tract. So when we feed probiotics, that's something that we usually feed throughout the production cycle. So every day they get a little bit, and they do have a beneficial effect. But most of the work that Tintin and I, we have done together, we have gone to commercial farms in intensive and extensive systems, and we have compared the microbiota between those two systems and identify what microbes are maybe missing our intensive production systems. And then we created this collection of commensal microbes. And we did control experiments where we can actually see that if we feed those microbes at the first day of life, once they will persist within the tract until the animals are 14, 21 days old. So that's telling us that, okay, those microbes are adapted and they might be more efficient in colonizing than the probiotics that we currently have. So I guess that's one of the limitations of the probiotics now that we're trying to address, in on top of understanding what is the role of each one of those microbes in the chicken gut.
I would like to add something to that. I think the rationale of comparing these systems is that we think some practices that we are using for like strict biosecurity measurements at the modern poultry production might prevent the exposure to this co-evolved microbes. So when Camilla mentioned about the studies, we actually got the chicks from commercial hatchery. So we found that they were colonized by the environmental microbes. But once we colonize them with some mature microbiome, these environmental microbes will be reduced to a really small portion of that community. So if we can expose them earlier, or we know what is a better community to colonize them early in life, that could be a really good approach.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So in looking at extensively versus intensively housed poultry, you're finding differences in microbes. So you mentioned biosecurity and strict biosecurity. Does that mean that there's a potential downside to having really good biosecurity control?
Yeah, so I think first we need to clarify that biosecurity is very important. So what we're trying to say is not that biosecurity may be bad for animal health, but when we think about microbiota development, what we see in the intensive production systems is that the animals have a very immature microbiota once they are young, and then that microbiota ends up maturing throughout the production cycle. However, if we think about a chicken in nature that gets exposed to the maternal fecal material and the environment, they are able to be colonized by a mature microbiota since day one. So the idea is not that we should discard biosecurity, but if we can do a target colonization with a mature microbiota that can promote that disease resistance in early life, that might be beneficial for preventing disease once the diseases occur, because they will get challenged with something. So in our case, we're using things like Salmonella enterococcus and avian pathogenic E. coli to challenge those animals after colonization and see if they respond better. And that's something that it's needed because we will be soon not be able to be using as many antibiotics as we're currently using to control those disease. So the idea of controlling disease with commensal microbes, it's something that we should be thinking about.
Are there other conditions related to intensive housing of poultry that also contribute to that difference in microbial populations?
I think Tintin can tell a lot about that because Tintin did a specific comparison on antimicrobial resistance between extensive and intensive systems.
Yeah, so I think not just about biosecurity measurements, it's also about nutrition and management strategies like disinfectants that we use in these commercial settings. So we have done some comparisons in the microbial community in terms of antimicrobial resistant genes. So we actually found that the microbes, the isolates we isolated from extensive farming systems like backyard chicken, organic farm, they are actually do not harbor the antimicrobial resistant genes. You know, these genes can be transferred to other microbes. So horizontal gene transfer could be a concern about the spread of antimicrobial resistant genes. We can see that for microbes isolated from the intensive farming systems, even though they withdraw the AGP, you can still detect that in like the recent years. So I think that's something we want to explore further, like, for example, in terms of finding the microbes we want to colonize the chicken, we may need to like go to like extensive farming system. That could be a very good resource for us to select the strains or species we want to colonize the bird.
I think I'll just add on that we have now like very good tools to be able to select those microbes that have specific functions and that don't have the antimicrobial resistance genes, and that we can safely add. And that's something that we didn't have in the past. So I think it's a great opportunity for us to actually be selecting functions. It's not about selecting specific microbes, but microbes that can do specific functions, either if it's competitive exclusion of pathogens or digestion of fiber material. And we can actually do a good job on selecting those and using for targeting approaches for production. So in a safe way.
I wanted to add some evidence, you know, like people, not just about this farming system, people have done like comparisons between red jungle fowl and wild turkey and with this intensive farming systems. And they do find that the wild animals or extensively raised animals tended to be more resistant to pathogenic like colonization. So that could be one direction we want to go, like to help with resistance to this pathogenic infection, and also what Camilla just mentioned about the nutrient utilization.
If you're enjoying this episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics, please remember to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends and family. You can also set the notifications to on from our channel so you don't miss any other upcoming episodes. As always, please feel free to leave us your comments anytime. Your feedback is always valuable to us.
Probiotech International is driven by innovation, inspired by nature, and passionate about contributing to a more sustainable, safe, and healthy food system. We work closely with our customers to deliver solutions to current and future challenges facing the animal production sector while using natural active ingredients such as chemotypes and polyphenols derived from plant extracts and spices. Our products follow a rigorous scientific validation process. They are then proven to work through thorough field research, certified for quality, and then brought to market as a complete and effective solution. In a world filled with rapid change, let Probiotech International deliver your opportunities for solutions and savings to your program. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information.
So I'd like to dig a little bit deeper into this missing microbes concept. Obviously, we've talked about how birds raised in intensive housing really doesn't reflect the, so if you want to call it, the natural environment of where chickens came from. And that can have implications on gut health, which in turn can have implications on performance. So when you talk about the missing microbes concept, does it mean that certain microbial niches are just not filled, or are they filled by other organisms? And is that a problem?
Yeah, so I'll go for this one. So when we do microbiota work in most animal species, they have three main phyla of bacteria. So that will be Bacteroidetes, Formicutes, and Proteobacteria. Proteobacteria is the one that has a lot of potential pathogens. When we actually look at the microbiota of broilers, and especially young broilers, most of them don't have Bacteroidetes. So the Bacteroidetes is basically a phyla, so a big group of microbes that is greatly reduced on those birds. So they are aberrant in the sense that they don't have the microbes that most animals have. And more important, they don't have the microbes that the extensively raised chickens have, because extensively raised chickens have this phyla. And among things that this group of microbes do, they are known to modulate immune responses and also digest fiber. So it makes sense for animals that are raised extensively and they then have access to grass and insects and all the different substrates that they need to degrade, complex substrates. It might not have that much sense on the intensive broiler system because we do give them diets that are more digestible. But if we think about disease prevention and immune modulation, then that's when it becomes like really, really important, or using alternative ingredients as well. So that's why I think it's important to understand that they are missing and that we might need to preserve those in some way in order to be able to come up with solutions for future or current problems.
Yeah, I think even though we're talking about the terms of missing microbes, but I think we wanted to emphasize on the functionality. So it's not just about the microbial taxa, you know, for example, certain strains, certain species that are missing. It's all about like their functions. Sometimes you will find different species or very host adapted strains or species, but they do have unique functionality. So I think we would like to look at this core functionality. For example, when Camilla mentioned about fiber degradation and utilizing certain nutrients in the diet or modulate the immune systems. So I think this missing microbes would be either including the microbial species, but also their functionality.
Yeah, and those animals that are usually missing the bacteroidetes group, they do tend to show a lot of proteobacteria. So that's when it's the concern of like, okay, then those bacteroidetes niches are open and they are being taken by proteobacteria, which might be potential pathogens.
So you mentioned that one of the ways to restore a more normal balance of microbes in the gut would be exposure to the hen's fecal material for colonization. Is that a practical approach or some variation of that? Is that a practical approach for commercial poultry?
We have tested some approaches. The idea of having just exposing the chicks to maternal fecal material, it's not feasible just because from biosecurity standpoint. So we have actually tested the use of defined communities. So basically go to a collection of selected microbes, and then we make a community and we give that to chickens that they owed. That might also be done. So we are doing that via oral gavage, which is not feasible in the industry setting because that's too much labor. But we have tested doing it via spraying in the cages, and that works as well. And also doing via what we call the cedar bird. So basically we colonize one chick and that chick will have that defined community and it will walk around the barn and spread that microbiota around their mates. So those the use of defined communities might be the best approach in a biosecurity standpoint. And using that cedar bird, then you just need to colonize a limited number of chicks and they will eventually spread that microbiota through your barn.
Yeah, I think this actually aligns well with our thoughts about the necessity to understand these microbes better. Because based on our experience, even though for some microbes that have been identified as strict anaerobes, they can actually persist in the environment longer than we thought. So I think we need to know more about their basic biology. For example, I think from our work, we identify some of the microbes that are pretty good at colonizing just by single exposure. So this could be some easy approach we could use in the future that could be part of consideration, you know, how we can utilize them in like an easy way to colonize the birds.
My last question is, if antibiotic use or overuse contributes to this concept of missing microbes or missing microbial function, is it possible that the alternatives that we're looking at as an industry, like probiotics or prebiotics or organic acids, essential oils, and so on, could they might also cause some microbes to go missing or to lose some microbial function?
Yeah, that's a very good thought. I think for sure, like, dietary component is the one of the major driver of the microbial community. And I do think it's possible, but I think there has been a very good meta-analysis in swine that they compared the effectiveness of the feed additives, their effectiveness in growth performance in swine. But there has been a lot of contradictory results. We didn't see consistent, benefit impact. So we're hoping our understanding of the gut microbiome can help with explaining these variations. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, we're selecting the microbes, but it helps us with understanding why sometimes these feed additives worked, why sometimes they don't. So I think that's even studying that can contribute to a better utilization of, you know, nutrition and management.
Camila, did you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, so I think I agree with what Tintin said. And I just another point that I want to highlight is the fact that sometimes we see an effect of a probiotic in one farm and then in a different farm, it doesn't have an effect. And probably when you compare the microbiota between the birds on those farms, they will have a different microbiota. So I guess part of it is, will the additives, either probiotic or organic acids, have an effect or not, depending on what it's already there. And that changes like the effect of what we are adding, because if we're adding something that is already there, we probably don't get as much as an effect.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boehringer Ingelheim. Health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International. Creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information. Evonik. We are sciencing the global food challenge. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is the mission of Jeffo. AB Vista, an innovative animal nutrition company offering intelligent solutions for the poultry industry. The combination of innovative products, technical expertise, and cutting-edge services provide the ideal tools to drive poultry production. To learn more about AB Vista tools, check abvista.com.
So just to finish up today, I'd like to ask each of you a few questions. So Ting Ting, what's your favorite poultry-related book or resource? What's your go-to?
Well, I think it's a very difficult question because we just have to select one. But, you know, for someone who's doing research in microbiome, I would say, like, we always go to journal articles. There's always new techniques, new products. But if in terms of book, I would say maybe the Poultry Signals, because I think it's a very good book for someone who's interested in the production system. So if you want to know more about the commercial chicken farming, that book would be a very good resource.
Camila, same question.
Yeah, so for me, I would go for the one that I use the most and that I always resort to is the Brazilian tables for poultry and swine nutrition. So either to see if my chicks in the experiment are growing properly or to design experiments and to evaluate nutrient utilization, I just go to that one. I went to the university where the group, the book was developed. So I have a special attachment to that one.
Yeah, those are both great resources. Camila, outside of agriculture, what's your favorite book or resource?
for me, one book that I read a long time ago, but it's still like I still remember a lot of it, is The Physician from Noel Gordon, because I think it's a very good story on how you try to get knowledge and overcome challenges on trying to get where you want to be.
Ting Ting, how about you?
I think I like to read books about technology development and how researchers and scientists make breakthroughs and solve problems. So I would probably recommend a book that I recently read, which is called The Genome Odyssey. So it talks about how this sequencing company evolved and how they solved issues, especially to help the patients. So I think those stories are very inspirational and insightful. So I recommend that book.
Yeah, great suggestions. Ting Ting, you've recently started a new faculty position at Purdue University. So as you've thought about this in seeking your position, what do you think is necessary for someone to be successful in your field?
That's a very good question. So I started at Purdue in January last year. So it's been a year and a half. So far, it's been great. But one thing I would think of would be to have the problem-solving mindset. Because, when we do microbiome research, a common question I received is that, well, what does it mean? Like, how would you apply that in practice? Or how would you translate that research or knowledge into poultry production? So I think once we have this mindset, we could think how this can be connected to the challenges faced by the poultry industry. What are the problems faced by the producers? So I really enjoyed that, in exploring that connection. So I would say like having this problem-solving mindset would be helpful.
So Camilla, you're in a slightly different stage of your career. What do you think is necessary for someone to be successful as a postdoc?
So I think it's both curiosity and flexibility. So when I finished my PhD, I decided that, okay, I did a PhD in poultry microbiota, and that's what I'm doing for my future. That's my career. And then I had an opportunity to work with like swine as a model for human medicine. And I was like, okay, I actually want to see how that works. So if you can get that mix of curiosity and flexibility and try to work with different techniques and amplify what you know, that puts you in a very good position for searching for different kinds of job opportunities.
Well, Dr. Ting Ting Zhu and Dr. Camilla Marcola, it's been a great visit with you. I've really enjoyed it. And thank you for taking time out with us today to talk about your research and the things that you're interested in.
Thank you, Dr. Korver.
Thank you.
Well, that concludes another episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. Thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is always important to us. You can visit our website at wisenetics.com to learn more about our podcast segments for poultry, swine, dairy, beef, feed mill, crops, and even pet food. I'm Doug Korver, and I'll see you next time on the Poultry Podcast Show.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.